Mr. Stonehouse, reel 3.
Oh, right, yes. Well, by that time, for some reason, I was getting worried about the lack of security. Also, I hadn't received the rest of my money, which I'd left, the 90,000, which I'd left on my arrival in France. And so, by good fortune, I met an American woman who was in Lyon at the time, called Virginia Hall, who was a great help in getting me organized, you know, because Joseph was absolutely useless. I wasn't able to get any money out of him. And whenever he sent me money through one courier or another, I always seemed to receive less than he said he'd sent. You know, there was all this very unpleasant feeling of we couldn't trust anybody. And then at the beginning of the first week in September, Virginia Hall rushed up to this Chateau of Urlevant, the first one I was in, to warn me that get off the air for a week because I'd been spotted. And
how had you found that out?
Because she had, through her connections in Vichy, she was there officially in Lyon as an American, because you have to remember, the Americans were not at war with Vichy France. So there was still an American consul in Lyon. And she was there, but she was, so she had all her contacts in Vichy and so on.
Was she a diplomat?
Some sort. I'm not sure what her role was. You'd have to ask Vera. She's the one who really helped me more than anybody else at that time in Lyon to get through all this morass of intrigue and inefficiency and God knows what, you know.
How had she come into contact with the resistance organization, do you know?
How did she, at that I don't know offhand. Because she was eventually sent back to France by SOE, I think. And I saw her again in America years later. But she had a wooden leg. She was well known, Marie à la jambe de bois. And she jumped into France, I think, later, in spite of her having a wooden leg. But what she was doing there officially, I don't know if she was a journalist attached to the American consulate in Lyon. The fact was that I was been warned not to go there because the place was watched, obviously. But out of desperation, I went to see her. I don't remember how I got contacted her. Maybe it was through Joseph originally.
Why were you so desperate?
Because nothing seemed to be happening. You know, all this, I wasn't able to get any money. I was running out of clothing, all sorts of things. I don't remember the details, except it was a sort of a nightmare of inefficiency and, as I say, intrigue. And there were several examples. For instance, I remember after I was arrested, which was in the last week in October, I still hadn't received by that time the 90,000. And I'd heard that Joseph and a girl courier had spent some time on the Riviera. Apparently, I was told, with some of my money. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But, for instance, after I was arrested, I was being taken for interrogation in Lyon, from the Petit Depot, where I was in prison, to a place of interrogation. And who should walk by on the other side of the street but Joseph and his girlfriend. And he saw me walk down between two gendarmes. He knew I was arrested. And yet he didn't do anything about destroying all his papers. And when we eventually, he was arrested. I've forgotten how much, you know, the dates exactly, but then eventually, sometime in halfway in November, we were at this at the Quai Perrache being interrogated, and who should walk into the room but Joseph, and walks over to me and shakes my hand. And I said, but I don't know you. Couldn't believe it. I think walk over. And the same thing happened 6 months later in Fresnes. Exactly the same thing with Peter Lechaine, who was working in the same area, also as a radio operator. And he was arrested either before me or after. I've forgotten now. But I'd finished all these painful, you know, tedious interrogations, first in Lyon for weeks and then in Paris, right up till Christmas Eve, 42. And I'd told so many lies, but eventually I thought that I wasn't going to be interrogated anymore, you know. And I was in solitary confinement in Fresnes, and who should, I think about March one morning, who should, I mean, the Germans came, took me from myself to another big room in Fresnes, not in, it didn't go into Paris. And who should walk into the room that Peter Lechaine.
What did he do?
He walks over to me and shook my hand and said, so glad to see you. And I said, mais je ne connais pas, monsieur, I don't know you. And
what was his reaction?
I forgot now, but I was absolutely livid. And after that, I was re-interrogated about all sorts of things I hadn't been asked about before. So I may be jumping to conclusions, but I felt that I could not understand either Joseph or Peter Lechaine gratuitously coming across and recognizing me.
Did you feel they'd done it deliberately?
I don't know why they did it. And I never wanted to see Peter Lechaine after that. And I told his widow eventually. And I didn't want to, actually. But I said, well, why not? You know, it's part of, it's the truth. I never forgave him that. You know, because it meant, but I don't know whether he was, either of them would have been tortured. I don't think they had. I think they thought it was all over, and the game was over, and, you know, let's relax and all. I don't know.
Going back to the American lady who gave you the help, can you specify what kind of help she gave?
Well, I'm trying to... can you switch off for a minute? And now we're at the... After all these intrigues and things and getting pretty brand off with the whole situation, my second courier arrived the first week in September, and she was a woman sent from London to the place Gontran. Because his Gontran was only 20 years student, his family was getting worried about him, and also he was a bit of a security risk because he had a girlfriend, and one of the rules was in this business was it was very dangerous to have a regular girlfriend or mistress. And in fact, I heard after the war, because his Gontran was executed at the end of the war by the Germans, and he'd been given away by a girlfriend, and that's the reason why I was told never to get in, have affairs with women because of the great security risk involved, you know, of jealousy and so on, and you know, the things you tell a woman, you know, in bed. So I've forgotten, we didn't get on Gontran at the time anyway.
What was the problem between you and he?
I think I got annoyed with him once because I went to his flat and his girlfriend was there, his mistress, who wasn't part of the thing. And I said, you know, you should have asked her to leave before I arrived, because it's putting me in danger for her seeing me. You know, she could have identified me. So they had no sense of security. You know how the French can be very, you can't tell them anything because they know much better than you do. And I think it was lots of little things like that. So this woman came out, was sent out from London, and she's English, and she's over there in that Her nom de guerre was Christiane. Her real name was Blanche Charley. And she was much older. She was much older than I was then. She was 42, in fact, same age as the century. And she came from Gibraltar. She flew from to Gibraltar from England, and from Gibraltar she sailed to Cannes in a fishing smack, landing on the Riviera, and took the first train to Lyon.
What kind of a woman was she?
She was an English. She was actually English, but she was age 42. Very a good-looking woman, very smart, and spoke very good English. And what her after the war? I think she ran a gallery in Brussels, or one of the great galleries before the war. So she was in the art field. And she only died about 2 years ago here. And
how did she carry out her work?
Oh, very efficiently. Except on the, I don't know if it's a time to mention it, at the time when we were arrested together at Hurlevent, you know, the first chateau we were in. And she is, let me see, how can I put it? On the, I've been on the air for several hours from Hurlevent, and I've been spotted by radio gonometry.
Yes.
The three vans, you know, that follow a beam, and where the three vans meet, that's where the transmitter is. And the Chateau Hurlevent was the one who's 8 miles out in the country, outside of Lyon. Because in those days there weren't any cars on the road. Maybe one a day, you know, was and there was this little bus, and you had to go down a little country lane to the main entrance to the chateau. Well, I'd been at the chateau on the air. This was on a Saturday morning, October the 24th, in fact. And she got off the bus off the main road and came down this little country lane to the chateau. And parked in this country lane was several lorries, no, or vans, that side, which were the radio vans. You know, and I was on the air. She arrived at the chateau, and she'd been up all night going to Vichy and so on, and so tired, she forgot to tell me. She forgot to tell me. She'd walked past these vans, and but then something happened. I've forgotten. Monsieur Jourdan must have come and said he'd seen some people. He's keeping an eye open when if there were any strange faces in the vicinity, and he'd seen someone. So he immediately turned off the mains. That's right. That was a prearranged signal with me that if there's anything fishy going on outside, and Christiane was sitting with me. When this was turned off, she was feeding me messages. We were encoding or decoding, I've forgotten, messages to me. And she said, "My God, it's the Germans." And I said, "What do you mean the Germans?" She said, "I forgot, I walked past them on the way here." And that was pretty awful because, you see, if she'd told me when she'd arrived that she'd passed these Germans, we'd have had plenty of time to pull my aerial down, get rid, and escape, because the castle wasn't surrounded by them. And she wanted to kill herself, she told me, because she felt so awful about that. I pulled the aerial down, but inadvertently left a little insulating porcelain thing hanging from a nail at the ceiling, and hit the my transmitter at the bottom. There was an old lift in this chateau at the bottom of the lift shaft, and then Monsieur Journal put the lift down and sort of jammed it there, and Christiane and I tried to get out the back way of the chateau, which overlooked the garden, overlooking the valley of the Rhone, and get out that way into the valley. But we got out on the back terrace, and we sat down, pretending to be making love, because we'd seen a man come around the far corner of the chateau. Well, there we were. Then another came with guns, you know, their guns, and we were caught.
Were they in German uniforms?
No, no, in plain clothes. And because they weren't, see, this was still unoccupied, you know, the free zone, so-called.
So they were French, and, were they?
No, they were German and French, the two together. The Deuxième Brigade Spéciale de Vichy and the Germans. And I think the Germans were also in the vans, you know, the radio people, the Germans. But all in civilian clothes. So I was beaten up then, and when we were arrested, they still hadn't found my radio, you see. And they arrested Monsieur Jourdan, but not his wife. She was never arrested, the beautiful Madame Jourdan.
Do you know the reason why?
Well, this was, it's all very odd, actually. They hadn't found anything, you see, so there was no reason. Why they never arrested her, I don't know, actually. Very strange that, because you thought they would have Norma immediately. And the old grandmother was there and wasn't arrested, and their little three-year-old daughter, Brigitte, were all there. And only Jourdan, Mr. Jourdan, Christian and I were arrested and taken into Lyon.
So they immediately beat you up, did they?
They beat me, yeah. And then they still hadn't proved that was any broadcast, that there's an emission from the chateau. And I thought, oh, well, there's nothing much they can do because they could have been from somewhere else or whatever. But then they found still hanging this little porcelain insulator from the aerial, hanging in one of the rooms there where I'd been working. And then they found my radio set at the bottom of the elevator shaft. And
You'd thrown it down the shaft, had you?
That I hadn't thrown it, I put it there in a reefer. It's a very old building. So there were some stones there. I put it in, I've forgotten now. And then the Mr. Jean put the elevator down, and hoping that they wouldn't, you know, use the elevator, but they did. I was accused of transmitting.
Where were you taken to?
Then I was taken to, in Lyon, to the Petit Dépôt de Saint-Jean, which is a small local jail in Lyon itself. I never went after one of the forts. And this is about the time that Barbie was taking over.
You heard the name Barbie?
No. I've been asked about that several times since, in the last few years about Barbie. And he was there at the time, but I was interrogated for several weeks by Germans, but unless I saw a contemporary photograph, I couldn't identify him, you know, and I've never seen a contemporary photograph of Barbie's. But he may very well have been there. Peter Lechaine, who arrested at the same time, claims that he was interrogated by Barbie, so it's quite possible, but I couldn't be sure, me personally.
Was Christiane taken to the same prison?
Christiane was, we were first in, yeah, right, and we were in this little prison. We were with all other little local prisoners. It wasn't a political prison, it was just a little local jail. And we weren't separated into cells and so on. It was just all the local, you know, some petty criminals. There was one very pretty girl who was what is known as a rat d'hôtel, is a hotel mouse, meaning that she sort of would very pretty go around, she, sort of a a prostitute whose beat were hotels. And she would probably also, go around knocking on doors and looking for clients. It was I don't know if it's something specific to France, but there was a name for it, Rat d'Hotel, someone who sort of, is in and out of hotels and maybe does a little stealing also and so on. But it was all just petty criminals, and there were a couple of political prisoners. And I've done some sketches on them at that period. And then we were taken elsewhere.
After how long?
For about 3 weeks, I suppose, to be interrogated at the Quai Perrache by the Germans.
So it was three weeks before they thoroughly interrogated you?
No. I think I was in. We were interrogated almost immediately. I don't remember, but by Germans, you see, not by the. And I remember after 3 days of this interrogation by the Germans, Madame Jourdan had not been arrested. They could not prove she knew I was English, so I decided to say I was English, which was a mistake in retrospect. But at the time, I did it because I thought I'm going to be executed, and I would like my family to be able to trace what had happened to me after the war under my real name. Because I don't think even then, maybe I'd have already changed my name from my original false identity of Michel Chapuis to something else. I've forgotten that, because I did lose my... I had my wallet picked on a streetcar in Lyon at one stage and lost all my identity cards. Anyway...
So you said you were Brian Stonehouse, did you?
Yeah, and I refused to speak French, you see, because... So they had to get... Because at this point, the questions were asked in German, translated into French, and I replied in French. So I thought, I refused to speak French. And so they had to get an interpreter to ask the questions first in English, then in French. No, first in German, then in French, and then in English. So by that time, I'd had time to think up an answer. Because my whole motivation in all interrogations was always to stall, to gain time. Never to say, I won't say anything, but invent. I used to invent all these tall stories, which was okay for a couple of weeks, but if you'd asked me 3 months later what I'd said, I'm a terrible liar. But the whole idea was to gain time, you see. And that's why I was so angry with Peter Lechaine the following year when, after all this marvelous house of cards I'd built, which I thought I wouldn't be asked about again, I had to admit that it was a whole pack of lies and start being interrogated again.
Can you describe how the interrogations were conducted?
Yes, I was never hit. So that's nothing I don't understand. I was threatened. I was starving. People would eat in front of me. I may have had a couple of smacks, but I was never tortured.
What were you threatened with?
You're going to be shot and so on. I've forgotten what the threats were. Pretty silly, actually. But I wasn't beaten up. Or in Paris. And I was expected to be, because they knew nothing. They weren't at all smart about my interrogating me. I would invent a lot of things where I'd transmit it from.
Why weren't they smart in their interrogation?
Well, this story is good for another 2 weeks because it'll take them, no more than 2 weeks to check up on the truth of what I'd said. For instance, I said they'd spot it one time in an area where I had actually transmitted from, a farmhouse, or a little cafe, rather. And I remember driving there, seeing a farmhouse on the hillside. And since they'd spotted me in that neighborhood, I said, well, I transmitted from the farmhouse. Well, then once I'd said that, I was worried silly, because suddenly it occurred to me, maybe that farmhouse that first doesn't have electricity, and if it does, it may have a direct current like at the chateau that of Chamoussi. And they said they'll soon go up there and check. They never did. But I used to worry about that, you know. Or I used to invent people. That's another trick I learned about when being interrogated. Can you describe so-and-so? I said, yes, I'd worked with so-and-so. I said, yes, what did he look like? And I used to try and describe first the people, describe the person who was interrogating me. And it's extraordinary how they don't recognize the descriptions of themselves. But I had to have a face I could tie in with my description. If I invented something without something I could tie it in with, you know, if you asked me 2 weeks later, I wouldn't have no idea what I'd said. I wouldn't remember because I didn't have a visual image to tie it in with.
Did they seem to believe what you were telling them at
yeah,
first?
Yeah, they did, you see. That's something I don't understand, because it all sounded very plausible. For instance, another thing I don't understand, Madame Jourdan, I've asked her that since the war, as a matter of fact, and I've seen her. I went to their daughter's wedding. We remained great friends. And I said, why is it you weren't arrested? And I said, you know, the last day in Lyon, before I went to sent to out of Lyon, the Germans came to me with a false document claiming that you admitted knowing I was a British agent and with your signature on it. And I said to them, absolute nonsense, she didn't know about it. And you know what Madame Jourdan said? Said, you know, that wasn't a phony document, it was a true one. Another question was with this lovely blonde and Blanche, you know, Christiane, my courier, was also a very good-looking woman. And the Germans asked me, said, well, were they your mistresses? And I said, well, what a question. And of course, this at the time, I was indignant, what a question. But in fact, they immediately jumped to the conclusion that they were. And therefore, did not interrogate them too closely. Although then they said, oh, you know, you have to get an idea of how Elsa looked. She was a beautiful blonde, very, very elegant, and so on, and, you know, a sort of bit of a sex symbol. And she was never put in jail. Now, the following year, and then after, by the middle of November, 11th of November, in fact, when the Germans occupied the rest of France, we were still in Lyon in jail. This is after this episode of Joseph recognizing me, and he was sent to Fort Montluc, I think. Christiane, Louis, and I were sent to another jail further south in France,